Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States in 1961.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned, no secret is revealed. That is why the Athenian lawmaker Solon decreed it a crime for any citizen to shrink from controversy. I am asking your help in the tremendous task of informing and alerting the American people, confident that with your help, man will be what he was born to be, free and independent.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President in 1996.
You were both in Skull and Bones, the secret society.
It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America?
It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America?
I've got a vision for what I want to do for the country. See, I know exactly where I want to lead. It's so secret we can't talk about it. What does that mean for America?
Good evening, and welcome to the broadcast on Sunday, the 30th of December, 2012. My name is Walt Stickle, and the last three broadcasts have been building for tonight's broadcast. President JFK exposes the unseen hand. In the archives of Mystery Babylon Radio, we have covered on December 9th, all roads lead to Rome. On the December 16th, the Council of Trent and the Jesuit Order. And last week's broadcast was Pope Benedict XVI celebrates the 200th anniversary in America. My guest tonight is Tom Fress of Inquisition Update at First Amendment Radio. Welcome to the broadcast, Tom, and thanks for being with us for the last 4 weeks.
Well, thank you for having me, Walt, and good evening to you and your listeners.
So we're going to get right into, we're going to listen and discuss the President John F. Kennedy's speech given at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel on April 27, 1961, titled The President and the Press Before the American Newspaper Publishers Association. And we're going to talk about the meat of the speech.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighed the dangers which are cited to justify it. Even today, there is little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions. Even today, there is little value in ensuring the survival of our nation if our traditions do not survive with it. And there is very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment. That I do not intend to permit to the extent that it's in my control. And no official of my administration, whether his rank is high or low, civilian or military, should interpret my words here tonight as an excuse to censor the news, to stifle dissent, to cover up our mistakes, or to withhold from the press and the public the facts they deserve to know. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned, no rumor is printed, no secret is revealed. No president should fear public scrutiny of his program, for from that scrutiny comes understanding, and from that understanding comes support or opposition, and both are necessary. I am not asking your newspapers to support an administration, but I am asking your help in the tremendous task of informing and alerting the American people. For I have complete confidence in the response and dedication of our citizens whenever they are fully informed. I not only could not stifle controversy among your readers, I welcome it. This administration intends to be candid about its errors. For as a wise man once said, an error doesn't become a mistake until you refuse to correct it. We intend to accept full responsibility for our errors, and we expect you to point them out when we miss them. Without debate, without criticism, no administration and no country can succeed, and no republic can survive. That is why the Athenian lawmaker Solon decreed it a crime for any citizen to shrink from controversy. And that is why our press was protected by the First Amendment, the only business in America specifically protected by the Constitution, not primarily to amuse and entertain, not to emphasize the trivial and the sentimental, not to simply give the public what it wants, but to inform, to arouse, to reflect, to state our dangers and our opportunities, to indicate our crises and our choices, to lead, mold, educate, and sometimes even anger public opinion. This means greater coverage and analysis of international news, for it is no longer far away and foreign, but close at hand and local. It means greater attention to improved understanding of the news, as well as improved transmission. And it means, finally, that government at all levels must meet its obligation to provide you with the fullest possible information outside the narrowest limits of national security. And so it is to the printing press, to the recorder of man's deeds, the keeper of his conscience, the courier of his news, that we look for strength and assistance, confident that with your help, man will be what he was born to be, free and independent.
Last week, on last week's broadcast, I read the preface of The Papacy and the Civil Power. I think it's appropriate to read that again by R.W. Thompson. This was written 126 years ago, and it's very prevalent today at 2012. R.W. Thompson's quote, "It has seemed to me for a long time that it was the duty of the people of the United States to make themselves familiar with the history of the papacy, its relationships to the civil power, and its attempted encroachments upon the rights of the existing governments. This conviction caused me to enter upon the investigations which have resulted in the preparations of the volume mainly for self-edification. And if the conclusions I have reached are not satisfactory to others, I shall be content if they are stimulated to make the investigations for themselves. The main goal of this broadcast is to stimulate the listener to do his own research on the history of Rome and its encroachments on the American government. Now we will listen to the speech, the president and the press, without, and, and, uh, And when my guest says stop, we'll stop and we'll comment on it. So I'll start the tape.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society.
Stop.
And we are as a people.
Okay. First of all, JFK was a devout Roman Catholic. First of all, his speech included a great deal more than what we're presenting to the listeners. And so that we're not accused of taking JFK out of context, we'll inform the listeners that we are focusing on the pertinent aspects of that speech so as not to belabor the listeners with discussions unrelated to the topic that we're discussing. We in no way intend to distort what JFK was saying. We're simply focusing on those areas of the speech where he talks about things that are pertinent to this discussion. Now, first of all, as I said, JFK was a devout Roman Catholic. He knew all about the secret societies within the Roman Catholic Church, such as the Knights of Malta, the Jesuit Order, and particularly the Knights of Columbus, of which he was a member. He was an oath-bound member of the Knights of Columbus. So he knew the operating mechanism, the operating machinery of the Roman Catholic Church to infiltrate and to subvert our government. All right, JFK, as I've said, himself was a Knight of Columbus. It's the Catholic version of Freemasonry. And JFK, throughout this speech, made direct but tacit implications of the Jesuit Order and the Knights of Malta, the Jesuit Order being the mother of all secret societies, and as we've discussed, or maybe haven't discussed, it's interesting to note now that Jesuitism controls all the secret societies of the world. Think of the Jesuit Order as the nucleus of an onion, and the outer layers are all the other secret societies that work under different names and under different oaths, but to serve the same purpose, and that is to create a one-world government, a one-world religion, and to put the Pope on Temple Mount in Jerusalem is the ultimate goal of the papacy. Now, JFK knew all about secret oaths and secret proceedings, and he condemned them all in this speech before the entire world. JFK, in doing this, declared war against his church and against all the secret societies that preserved his church and that opposed our Protestant constitutional republic, our Bill of Rights, and our Protestant faith. He was opposing the apparatus of the machinery that was at work in here, right here in America, to destroy Protestantism, and we call it the Jesuit-led Counter-Reformation. And part of the Jesuit-led Counter-Reformation was to get control of the press. Now, if your listeners will get a piece of paper and a pencil, write this down. Operation Mockingbird. Operation Mockingbird. Write that down and do your own research on Operation Mockingbird. That was a period of time in history during the Kennedy administration when the CIA, the Knights of Malta-controlled CIA, was buying up the press to control the information that the American people were getting. And one of the principal Knights of Malta that owned a significant portion of the press at that time was William Randolph Hearst. And you can read what is on Wikipedia about Operation Mockingbird and see for yourself that the press was under control, and President Kennedy was speaking to that press. Now, he said, and this is just the portion of the speech that we've taken out to examine and to analyze. He said the very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. Now, what is significant about this in regard to JFK's Catholicity? First of all, Roman Catholic canon law, to which JFK was intimately familiar, being a Knight of Columbus and a devout Roman Catholic, Roman Catholic canon law condemns and denounces free and open societies. Now, what is a free and open society that in a free and open society that the Roman Catholic canon law hates so badly? Freedom is generally thought of as free speech, freedom of the press, freedom of religion, freedom of conscience, and the freedom of the people to govern themselves. In Roman Catholic canon law, the people are not to govern, but that all governments of the world must be hierarchical. The top of the pinnacle of government should be the Pope, and beneath that, the kings of the earth, and beneath that, the people. The people are at the bottom. And in order to maintain that hierarchical structure, that papal structure, is that the people must be put into subjection and bound by Roman Catholic canon law, that they're not allowed to speak against the Pope or the King, and they're not allowed to speak contrary to the teachings of the Roman Catholic Church, and they're not allowed to print Bibles, that the Roman Catholic Church was the dispenser of all truth, spiritual and temporal, and that there was there in the ideal papal world government, there is no liberty, no free and open society such as there is here in the United States of America. Now, Roman Catholic canon law I've already mentioned, but you can also research for yourself if you like, and I encourage the listeners to do this, to research the Syllabus of Error. And I'll spell it S-Y-L-L-A-B-U-S, the Syllabus of Error by Pope Pius IX in 1864, that condemned freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of conscience, and freedom of religion. It also condemned the Republican form of government, where a Republican form of government is that which came out of the Protestant Reformation. Prior to the Protestant Reformation, there was nothing but papal dictatorship and tyranny. The kings answered to the Pope, and the people answered to the kings. No government operated to respond to the needs and wishes and desires of the people. So the people were oppressed. Now, during the Protestant Reformation, it was understood that the Pope was no king, he was no Christ, he was no vicar of Christ, he was Antichrist. And they also learned, after reading the scriptures for themselves, that they were the temple of the Holy Spirit, and the Holy Spirit dwelt in every man who received the gospel truth. They became the temple of God. And as such, having possession of that divine truth, and the scriptures in their hearts, and God's law written upon their hearts, they decided that the governments should serve the people, and the Pope should just go away. And so out of that came republics, constitutional governments, governments of law that were based on God's law, the Ten Commandments. And this is where we get our republican, our constitutional republican form of government. Now, in our constitutional Protestant form of government, we despise secrecy. We want a free and open society. We want to have the right of freedom of religion, freedom of conscience, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, and freedom of thought. And so secrecy, in the context in which JFK is speaking, is repugnant to this Protestant form of government. Now, I hope I've made that clear. The context of JFK's speech is to promote the Protestant form of government, freedom, an open society, in contradistinction to that which has always been upheld by his own church, the Roman Catholic Church, and particularly the papacy and the Jesuits, who were in an attempt to overthrow this form of government, commensurate with the dictates of the tenets of Pope Pius IX, Encyclical and Syllabus of Error of 1864. Now, continue with the speech.
Kipo?
Inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, into secret proceedings.
Stop.
We decided long ago.
Okay. Now, what he said, and I'll read it because I have the text right before me. I consider this sentence to be an unnecessary interjection that JFK put in his speech to get people's attention. It says, "And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings." Okay, unquote. Now, the next sentence is, "We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweigh the dangers which are cited to justify it." All right, now let me read the first two sentences of that speech without this unnecessary interjection and see if it changes the context of the speech at all. Here's how it goes. "The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweigh the dangers which are cited to justify it." Now, I ask you, what relevance in that context is this unnecessary interjection? "And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings." It has no inherent relevance to what he appears to be saying throughout the rest of this paragraph. And I want the listeners to read this speech for themselves and to find out what you think is the reason why JFK interjected this short but very poignant and attention-getting phrase. He says, "And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings." My theory is that he put this short, poignant, and very important phrase in there not to complicate his speech, but to draw attention to that particular unnecessary interjection. You have to understand that people after JFK read this speech, delivered this speech, that those who heard it would have gotten a transcript of it and read it carefully and examined it and looked for secret or hidden meaning, a clearer understanding of what JFK was talking about. Now, this is the case of every presidential speech. This particular phrase, "And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings," would have stuck out like a sore thumb to them, just as it stuck out as a sore thumb to me. And what was the question that they were intended to ask by reading that question, that unnecessary interjection into an otherwise perfectly flowing speech? Why did JFK put this phrase in there? Let me ask you, to what was JFK referring? This is the question that every press member should have asked when reading that phrase. First of all, they had to stop and consider that the founding fathers of the United States were almost to a man Freemasons. They had sworn oaths, secret oaths, and participate in secret proceedings. And when was it in American history that we as a people are inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and secret proceedings, when our entire founding fathers were Freemasons, almost to a man? Was he talking about the one brief period of time in American history out of the killing of the Freemason, whose name escapes me at the moment? Walt, maybe you can remind me, but there was a Freemason that was killed, and out of that scandal came the anti-Masonic party or the anti-Mason party. But that was what was his name? Walt?
Joseph Smith.
No. Not Joseph Smith. He was the founder of Mormonism.
Right.
We're talking about William
Morgan.
Morgan, yes, right, right. William Morgan was a big scandal in this country. William Morgan was going to reveal the secrets of Freemasonry in a book, and the Freemasons killed him. And it became a big scandal in this country, and for a brief time there was a political party that was created to oppose Freemasonry, the secret society, of which our founding fathers were all oath-bearing members. They all swore oaths to keep the secrets of Freemasonry. So what was JFK speaking about? When in American history were we as a people inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths and secret proceedings, when all of our founding fathers were Freemasons? This had to do nothing but to just draw question after question after question to the members of the press that were listening to his speech, and then later reading the transcript of that speech to analyze it further. What was the question that they were to ask themselves? And I've just asked them, what secret society, what secret oaths, and what secret proceedings was he talking about? If he wasn't talking about Freemasonry, because of all of our founding fathers were Freemasons, which secret society was he talking about? And it's very important to recognize that that reference to inherent and historical opposition to secret societies, to secret oath and secret proceedings should have stuck out like a sore thumb to those who read that speech. Now, go ahead, Walt, with the recording.
That the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweigh the dangers which are cited to justify it. Even today, there is little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions.
Okay, stop. All right. He said, we decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighs the dangers which are cited to justify it. Now, what he's referring to is the secrecy of a controlled press leads to tyranny. All right, the press was always controlled in the old world order in Europe, in Vatican or Jesuit or rather papal-controlled Europe before the Protestant Reformation. The press was controlled, and that fostered the tyranny that ruled all of Europe in the old world order. So if we don't want to return to papal tyranny, then we must have a free press. And remember, JFK was speaking to a press that he had to know was already controlled by his church through the Knights of Malta and the Jesuit order. And he says, even today there is little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions. All right, what was the threat and what was the closed society that we were trying to be different than? He was talking about the Soviet Union, and what JFK had to know was that the Soviet Union was controlled by the Jesuit order, that Stalin was a Jesuit priest, and that all of the precursors to Stalin were Jesuit-trained. Trotsky and Lenin were Jesuit-trained. They served the papacy. And he says, even today, there's little value in ensuring the survival of our nation if our traditions do not survive with it. In other words, this country cannot survive unless it has a free press. If it imposes the controlled press under Jesuit and Roman Catholic and Knight of Malta and Roman Catholic canon law, this country cannot survive. And I'm convinced that JFK knew that if this country ever fell, it would become because the press got controlled by the Jesuit order, by the Knights of Malta, and tyranny would result. And he knew that it would be papal tyranny that would result. Now, continue with the recording.
Today, there is little value in ensuring the survival of our nation if our traditions do not survive with it. And there is very little that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment.
Stop the tape. Okay, here's what he said. And there is very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment. JFK is simply telling us that the national security of this nation will be threatened, and the result of it will be a controlled press, and that censorship and concealment will lead to tyranny. He put it out so as not to alarm the American people into a rebellion. He put it out in a form that would not incite tremendous controversy. Had he had openly admitted that the press was already controlled and named those members of the Knights of Malta and the Jesuit Order and the CIA that controlled the press under Operation Mockingbird, it would have caused a revolution in this country. A lot of good and innocent people would have died. But it was up to the press members to which he was speaking to investigate what he was talking about and come up to the conclusions and then work slowly, methodically, and carefully to inform and alert the American people to the domestic danger that was already in control of this country, the Roman Catholic Church, the Knights of Malta, the Jesuit Order, and how they were trying to overthrow our Protestant Constitutional Republic, our Protestant Bill of Rights, and our Protestant religion. And this is inherent in his speech, if you know what he was really driving at. Now, he continues. Go ahead, Walt.
And to permit, to the extent that it's in my control. And no official of my administration, whether his rank is high or low, civilian or military, should interpret my words here tonight as an excuse to censor the news, to stifle dissent, to cover up our mistakes, or to withhold from the press and the public the facts they deserve to know.
Okay, stop. All right, he was talking about the someone who would use a threat to our national security to sanction official censorship and concealment. And the resulting tyranny that would come about as a result of it. He said, that I do not intend to permit to the extent it is in my control. Okay? So here is a specific warning to the Knights of Malta and the people that controlled the press at that very time. I do not intend to permit to the extent that it is in my control. That I do not intend to permit to the in the extent that is in my control. In other words, it was a tacit warning, the Knights of Malta. If you continue, I'm going to blow the lid on this. He is not going to allow this country to go into censorship and concealment so that tyranny, papal tyranny, could replace our Protestant freedoms. He simply said that, I do not intend to permit to the extent that it is in my control. And listen, as President of the United States, he had plenty of power of the press. Okay, so the warning went out to the Knights of Malta and the Jesuits. It was a threat, what he was intended to do if they continued. Now, go ahead, Walt.
Opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned, No rumor is printed. No secret is revealed.
Okay, stop. Here is where JFK specifically references the Jesuit order. He says, for we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy. Now, first of all, you have to ask yourself, what is a conspiracy? Well, that's when at least two or more people get together and conspire to do something. You can't have a conspiracy by one person. It takes at least two. But he prefaced that by saying a monolithic conspiracy. Now, anybody with a brain in the press would have to ask, well, what was he smoking that day? Why would he use an oxymoron to describe a conspiracy? How do you have a monolithic conspiracy? You simply cannot have a monolithic conspiracy, except for one thing. Only one possibility in all the world, and that is the Jesuit general. And if you learn what the Jesuit order is all about, you understand that the Jesuit general is the god of Jesuitism, and that every Jesuit priest must simply be nothing but a thoughtless, willless instrument in the hands of the Jesuit general. He is to have no thought or will of his own. He is to have no familial relationships in the world, no national loyalties. He is to think as the Jesuit general thinks and do as the Jesuit general says to do, to do it unquestioningly, immediately, and unerringly, as if they were the Jesuit general themselves. That is the only institution on the face of the earth that qualifies to be identified by an oxymoron called a monolithic conspiracy. And that conspiracy is ruthless. If anybody who's ever done any history of the Jesuit order can investigate. Now, they rely on covert means for expanding their sphere of influence, on infiltration. They've infiltrated all the nations, all the governments, and all the churches. They use infiltration instead of invasion. They're not an armed war-making machinery. They are clandestine in all their operations. They subvert elections. How did the Jesuit order subvert the elections of the United States? They control the Council on Foreign Relations. The Council on Foreign Relations picks all the candidates for presidency. All the presidential candidates in this country are picked by the Council on Foreign Relations. And indirectly, they select the ones that are picked by the Jesuit general. So the Vatican picks all the candidates. Now, at what point does it make any difference that the American people go to the polls and vote if the Pope's already picked all the candidates? All right? You go to the polls, you think you're voting for the President of the United States, but you're only voting between two papal picks. So the entire electoral process in this country has been overturned. Okay? They rely on intimidation instead of free choice. That is embodied in all of Roman Catholic canon law. The threat of excommunication and eternal damnation if you exercise any free choice in your thoughts, your speech, your press, or your belief systems. They rely on guerrilla warfare by night instead of armies by day. They are the black regiment of the Roman Catholic Church. It is a system which has constricted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military. You're going to find Jesuits in the military. Diplomatic, you're going to find Jesuits in the State Department. You're going to find intelligence. You're going to find Jesuits, Knights of Malta in the CIA and all of the intelligence gathering services throughout the world. Economic, you're going to find Jesuits and Knights of Malta control the banks in this country. Scientific, you're going to find the Jesuits control the universities and NASA. And political operations, which I've already discussed with the Council on Foreign Relations. The Jesuits, through the Council on Foreign Relations and through the CIA, controlled nearly every aspect that we've just mentioned: military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political. All right, its preparations are concealed, highly secret. They're not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. That means they're put to death. If any Jesuit reveals the secrets of Jesuitism, he is killed. He's never praised. And it says no expenditure is questioned. There's your CIA black budgets, your NSA black budgets, all controlled by the Jesuit order, and it's researchable information for all your listeners. Now, go ahead with the recording.
No president should fear public scrutiny of his program.
Stop the tape. You notice the emphasis that he says on his program? No president should fear public scrutiny of his program. His emphasis on the word his is to be understood that this president was separating himself from any Jesuit or black ops control. The CIA was not going to control his White House, neither was the Council on Foreign Relations, and neither was the Jesuit order. Neither was the Pope of Rome, and he said so specifically in a speech that he delivered to Protestants in this country who were then concerned that if JFK, a Roman Catholic and a Knight of Columbus, won the presidency, that the Pope would be the real president of the United States and JFK would be just a yes man. And he comforted all of his Protestant suspicions by saying no Pope would rule his White House. Okay, go ahead with the recording.
Say, Tom, it's 41 minutes. I think we're about halfway through. Would you like to come back and finish this on another broadcast?
Yes, that'd be fine.
Yes, I think it's so. Anyway, could you tell right now? Tom is reading The Papacy and Civil Power by R.W. Thompson. He's not only reading it, but he's making commentaries. I strongly suggest that you go to inquisitionupdate.org and sign up for his following. There's no spamming. He not only reads the book, he makes commentaries. Could you tell the folks when to listen to your broadcast, Tom?
Yes. Inquisition Update is heard Monday through Friday on www.firstamendmentradio.com. And you tune in at 10 o'clock Central Time. That would be 9 a.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Central, 9 a.m. Mountain, and 8 a.m. Pacific on FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Again, it's Inquisition Update with Tom Fress, and the book is The Papacy and the Civil Power. The Pope rules the world through the governments of the world, replacing constitutional republics with Roman Catholic canon law. And it is emphasized all throughout history. Make no mistake about it. And this is exactly what's happening in this country today. Back to you, Walt.
Okay, thanks again for coming, Tom. And so we'll see you on the next broadcast, and we'll finish this off.
I got a poor starting life, heading downhill real fast. Can't see the future, ain't recalling the past. I'm at the crossroad of life, stuck on the tracks. I can't go forward and I ain't going back. But there's a light at the end of the tunnel, they say. You just got to live life day by day. Keep the faith, hold your head high. Soar like an eagle and fly. I've been neglecting my family, I lost all my friends. Can't tell you where the day starts, don't know where it ends. I burnt all my bridges and spent my last dime. I've got my life on hold for an indefinite time. But there's a light at the end of the tunnel, they say. You just got to live life day by day. Keep the faith, hold your head high. Soar like an eagle and fly. I've decided to change this old life around by picking one foot up and putting the other one down. I'm following Jesus, I'm making amends. I'm seeking forgiveness from family and friends. Cause he's the light at the end of the tunnel, you see. Give it all to Jesus, he'll set you free.
keep his faith, look to the sky, soar like an eagle and fly. Yes, he's the light of the world, not just the tunnel you see. Give it all to Jesus, he'll set you free. Keep his faith,